Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another episode. Today, my guest is going to be the Kingpin, Angel Medina. We talk ECW, the Baldies, Dutch Mantel, and much more. That is coming up soon. As many of you probably know and have seen online, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame balloting is finished, and there are 9 new inductees for 2024. Those 9 are Roman Reigns, Shinjo Takagi, Paul Orndorff, Johnny Rougeau, The Young Bucks, Los Hermanos Dinamante, Seema, Johnny Saint, and Bobby Davis. I can't say that I agree with all those. I do definitely agree with Paul Orndorff, Johnny Rougeau, Bobby Davis, and then I think Roman Reigns and Johnny Saint are applicable and also should be in there. I still can't get behind. I'm not familiar enough with some of the other. I know who they are. I haven't seen enough of their work to make a lot of calls. I still stand by the fact that I don't think the Young Bucks belong in, yet at least, but it is what it is. I understand the audience. I understand the process here. So be it. But there are your 9 new inductees into the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame for 2024. Now, guys, I'm going to remind you once again, my Facebook account was hacked and suspended. I'm not sure if I'll ever get it back. I don't know. I'm trying, but I just don't know how it's going to work out. It's just a pain in the butt. In the meantime, I have created a Facebook page to use, so go and search for Nostalgic Dave Dynasty on Facebook, and please like that page. And of course, like I've always said, the best and primary way to keep up with me is by following me on X at The Dave Dynasty. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I'll have our guest, Angel Medina, so stick around. Phil Sundry Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, 3-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee bit.ly/listen2screams. That is listen, the number two, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by the leader of DeBaldi's, Angel Medina. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, but you got to address me correctly, man. It is the Kingpin, Angel Medina, man. I earned that monarchy. I earned it. If I wanted to take it to the next level, it would be the King of the Streets, the Kingpin Angel.
I apologize, sir. I apologize. I totally understand him. I don't need any heat from the Kingpin. So I read that you were born in New York, but you grew up in Puerto Rico. Is that correct?
No, that's a negative. That all those things on Wikipedia are kind of false, man. You can't believe everything on the internet. I was born in Brooklyn and I was raised in Queens. So yes, I lived in New York all my life. I spend most of my summers as a child, since I was like a kid. I mean, like three and up, or maybe two and up. On my summers at my grandmother's in Puerto Rico. So if you want to say I was raised there, yes, but only for the summers when I was out of school.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, so not when I was two. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
From childhood and up.
I guess that's how that got, why they got put on there. But did you grow up a wrestling fan?
No, I was more of a wrestling fan in junior high school. That occurred during my, I think it was like in the eighth grade. A friend of mine introduced me to like a Wrestling Illustrated magazine with the Four Horsemen on the cover, and he was a huge wrestling fan, and he told me that oh man, you got to watch wrestling, it's great. And so I watched trying to remember, I think it was the Ric Flair versus Sting, Clash of Champions on TBS.
Yeah, the first one.
Yeah, and I don't remember what year it was, because I can't say it was 88. But I want to say like 87, 86, something like that, around that time.
Yeah. And So were you trained by Johnny Rods?
That is correct. I was trained by the Unpredictable One.
Yeah. At Gleason's Gym, correct? And
in Brooklyn, New York. Yeah. I was trained at Gleason's Gym in Brooklyn, New York, known as the Dumble District. It was different back in the days. I mean, Gleason's Gym was in a warehouse environment location, where it was just not a it's not what it looks like today. Today is just very preppy, very urbanized. Now everybody who has some form of money lives there. There's a Starbucks, there's a deli, there's a Jewish delicatessen. You know what I mean? Like back in the day, there was just a pizzeria, and everything was warehouses.
Yeah, so you're talking Brooklyn. So that's Mike Tyson country, right?
Oh yeah, I mean he had an office over there when but in the 90s or maybe like early 2000s, I remember they had a office for him. But yeah, it's Mike Tyson country.
Yeah, man, he was destination watching back in the day. It's like every fight, man, you had to watch.
But you got to remember, Gleason's Gym is just world famous. It's known from every boxers. I mean, guys I used to see stand there. Arturo Gatti trained there when I was training there. Zab Judah trained there. I'm just visualizing the people that I saw when I was there. Roy Jones was boxing by the wrestling ring one time. He was just hitting the bag, and we were joking with him. Mitch Green used to be there all the time training. Even the guy from Blue's Clues. One day I was standing there and I'm like, man, that guy looks familiar. He had a tattoo on his arm and he's punching the bag. And I'm like, hey, man, that's the guy from Blue's Clues. You know, but you don't recognize him because, you know, he's out of that, you know, the outfit and the gimmick. Yeah. But it was the guy from Blue's Clues. And, you know, you see a lot of celebrities there that you're not aware that they're training there. Swank was the, from the Clint Eastwood movie, the boxing movie.
Oh yeah, Hilary Swank. Yeah.
Yeah, she trained there. Chuck Norris did his infomercials there. A lot of movies were filmed there. I mean, I could give you a list of many movies that were filmed at Gleason's Gym. You know, it's just well known.
Yeah, well, and talk to me about Johnny Rods, right? Because he is so underappreciated for how talented he was, and especially you hear how good he was as a trainer.
Oh, Johnny's awesome, man. I love Johnny. I haven't reached out to him because I'm just one of those guys. I don't bother him. I'm just one of those guys. I just don't want to keep blowing up his phone. But Johnny's always welcoming. Every time I call him, we talk for a little bit. Johnny was a great trainer. He was old school. He was rugged. He was different. He trained us the right way. I'm not knocking any other school because everybody's gonna put their school over, but I mean, if you look at the lineage that came from Gleason's gym, I mean, yeah, Playboy, Buddy Sharp, had some great guys, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of schools that bring out some great talent, but I mean, Johnny had an alumni of individuals that became famous. And he just trained us in a different way. That's why we were totalitarians in the ring. We were ring generals. We were able to handle ourselves in the ring when it came down to other individuals. So Johnny's like my dad. He trained me since I was 17. I look up to him. I admire him. I owe my whole career to him. If it wasn't for Johnny, I wouldn't be where I'm at. It's just words cannot express how I feel about the man. I know I'll probably get shit from the boys. Like, yeah, well, if you owe him a lot, well, you should call him more. It's just, I'm just a quiet guy. I'm just so laid back, But I knowing Johnny, if I would call him, I'd be like, well, Johnny, the door swings both ways. You can call me too,
So when you finished up training, you were working around in the Northeast there. What was that like at that time? Because it's not like, there were a lot of territories, a hotbed. I mean, so what was the Northeast like trying to break in at that time?
I mean, it was nothing too difficult. I mean, it was just shows, man. It was just regular house shows. It's way before the internet. I mean, I'm not saying way before the internet. It's not like we lived in a, but during the 90s, I mean, yeah, there was the computer, but there was it's not like it, how it is today. I mean, back in the days when you wanted to get a tryout from WWE, you needed to send a VHS tape with your bio and your resume, and it was like a big old packet, and you send it to them. Now you could just do everything online. Yeah, you just had to talk to promoters and network, and I mean, I worked for like Tommy Jeanette. He used to run these carnivals, up the East Coast. I was with Bill Edey, Tony Atlas, Big Vito LaGrasso. Just trying to remember all the individuals that were there. The midgets from Jerry Lawler's. I want to say sleazies, queasy, whatever they were. The
Oh yeah, the dinks or whatever they were.
Yeah, it was the Dinks, but Jerry Lawler had his Royal Midgets. So
Oh
Little
yeah.
Louis, it was Little Louis. He was one of them. I mean, we had a blast. It was just networking and getting to know people. And that's one thing about today's wrestling organization that sometimes I think it misses. Like, you just need to go out there and put yourself out there and network yourself. It was just different. You just had to hustle. It was nothing too difficult. It was just something like, hey, Johnny, not Johnny Rods, but like, hey, Johnny, can you talk to this promoter and see if if he's looking for any new talent? Oh yeah, come down to the show. And then you had to drive all the way. There was no Zoom. There was no StreamYard. It was face to face. Going to the shows, wasting, taking the time out of your day to go out there and waste the gas and sit there. Hey kid, nice meeting you. Well, if we have a spot open, we'll let you know. That type of crap.
Well, I mean, skipping forward a little bit, you in the late 90s, you wound up obviously in ECW, and you formed a stable called the Baldies. So how did that come about with Paulie bringing you in and doing this thing? How was all that? Who approached who? Did Paulie know you from the scene? How did that all come to be?
Well, Johnny. How it originally started. Okay, let me just start from the beginning. How everything just transpired to that moment. Well, Devon, me and Devon Dudley, we're close. He's from Gleason's gym, and when I was training at Gleason's gym, Devon was just came back from like from a hiatus of training, because he used to be a postal worker. He used to work at the post office. He lived in Yonkers. And I want to say he took like 6 months off, 8 months off, for whatever reason, family reasons, work reasons. So he came back, and we were just working out in the ring, and that's how we got to know each other. Then maybe like 8 months later, Johnny came up to him and asked him, hey, this Paul Heyman is looking for a Black Dudley. And I mentioned them to you, and I want to see if you want to go up there and try out. Now, I don't know what the conversation entailed. I'm just giving you what was told to me at the time, because this was a private conversation between Johnny and Devon. Well, Devon, that the rest is history on that aspect. So one day, A friend of mine named Jabba Shibibi, that was his wrestling name. He played like an Arabic manager. We were training in the gym, and he was like, we're just talking, just like me and you're talking right now. And I was, hey, what you got planned for this weekend? And he goes, well, this weekend, and it was like a Tuesday. He goes, oh, Saturday, I have to go to Philly. You know, Devon's been having me come down to Philadelphia to do workouts to train to be a referee. Man, that's cool. Awesome. So then the week went on, and I saw him Thursday, or yeah, I think it was a Thursday, and we're just working out. And I'm like, man, yo, it's almost time, man. You'd be heading out to Philly this Saturday, aren't you? And he's like, bro, I won't be able to go. I said, why can't you go? He goes, my car is messed up, you know, and I can't get it fixed in time, so I don't think I'm gonna go. And I said, well, hey, if you need a lift, I'd be happy to take you, but you know, you need to call Devon and see if it's okay for me to come down. So when he decided, he said, all right, I'll ask him. So Devon's told him, yeah. He said, tell Angel, just bring his stuff, bring his gear, you know, because that's one of the rules in wrestling. You always bring your gear. And so I said, all right. So anyway, long story short of that, we went down there, you know, got dressed in my workout gear, got in the ring, worked out with a bunch of the guys from ECW. When I went to the back, Paul, this is how Paul got to know me. When I went to the back, he was talking to Sabu and Rob Van Dam. When he was in that conversation, he stopped in the midst of that conversation. Hey, kid, come here. He goes, hey, I like what I saw out there. You know, and that's how he was talking. He was like, thinking, just stick around. You know, just stick around. So I went back to Devon and I said, D, you know, I called him D. That's what. So I said, D, Paul told me I did good, but he just told me to stick around. He goes, Angel, just stick around. And I said, yeah, but I don't want Angel. If Paul told you to stick around, trust me, stick around. So I stuck around, and just came to the shows, you know, helped out a little bit, just, you know, watched the matches, worked out in the ring. Tony DeVito showed up, you know, at that time. So I got to know Tony, you know, and during that time we were doing off and on like skits, meaning one day I was dressed all in black, pretending to be Mustafa for an angle for New Jack. So I was dressed under a hood, a big old jacket, a mask, and oh my God, who's that? That's Mustafa, you know, because we were the same height. So we were working that. Then DeVito was doing, you know, just regular wrestling things. Then they came up with an idea for DeVito to do like this American History X character, like a skinhead. So I had to buy a bunch of Doc Martin boots, some jeans. You know, whatever type of t-shirt that represented, you know, the skinhead movement or some type of band that, you know, is associated with some type of skinheads. So he was, you know, they were just trying to find our niche. Then one day, Paul came up to me, and this is how it transpires. This is funny. Paul, one day, no, first of all, New Jack, I talked to New Jack and we're sitting in a car. Then he said, I'm thinking about bringing the gangsters back. And, you know, I'm looking for a tag team partner. You know, and I think you'd be able to fit. So I'm like, huh? So I'm like, yeah, you know, I think we could do something good, you know. So you work good, you move good, you know. So I was gonna, and supposedly, apparently, you know, this is just a conversation that he wanted to do the new gangsters. Then after that, where I forgot what town we're in, but the original they were gonna bring the Insane Clown Posse in. So then, apparently before. Paul pulls me to the side. He goes, hey, I got an idea. I'm thinking about putting you with the Insane Clown Posse as their bodyguard. So I would look like one of the Jokers from the cartoon the Batman cartoon where the henchmen were dressed up in clown face, but they were big muscular muscle for the Joker. So he goes, yeah, you're gonna be, you know, the bodyguard for the, you know, Insane Clown Posse. You know, that's what I'm thinking about. Okay, whatever. Then something went wrong. And Insane Clowns never showed up, you know, like something fell through. So then I was still wrestling, and then we're in Michigan, if I remember correctly. And he pulls me and DeVito to the side, and he goes, "Hey, I got an idea. You ever heard of the Baldies? You ever saw the movie The Wanderers?" And I said, "Well, yeah, when I was a little younger, I haven't seen it in a long time." He goes, "There was a group called the Baldies, and we're thinking about doing this fraction of the Bald you, DeVito, Rod Price, PN News, and Big Vito." You know, as the Baldies. So I'm like, whatever, man. It's whatever. And Tommy was there. It was Tommy's Paul's idea. Like, hey, whatever you want, we're willing. So that's how the Baldies became because of an idea that Paul and Tommy had. And then our first match was actually, I mean, we're not even dressed as the Baldies. Everybody was dressed all different outfits and stuff. But it was a house show. And I got the video footage too. It was a house show. And then we all beat up on Spike Dudley, and New Jack comes out. And that was the kind of like the, not the, you know, like a, it's not the pilot, you know, when you like before yeah. they do the, but the pilot is like, hey, this is a test.
Yeah, like test. A pitch. Yeah.
The pitch of the, but they yeah. film it. They do it. They yeah, put it all yeah, together. Yeah. So it was like the pitch and stuff to visually see how it looked. So we did it and they liked it. So then yeah. that's when we did the angle at the ECW arena. So everything that happened was like that. Tommy and Paul.
Yeah, and man, I'll tell you what. You know, I mean, I love ECW right all the way through. But you know, some people knock, you know, late ECW, whatever, but the Baldies were definitely a highlight, and was good stuff. And I always got into it. And I mean, at various times, right, man, you were with, you know, Vito, Tony DeVito, like you talked about, Vic Grimes, PN News, Red Dog, different guys. But I got to ask, because I just talked to him not too long ago and interviewed him here on the show. What was Who's it that? Like?
Which guy?
PN News. PN News. PN News.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it like working with Paul, PN News?
He was great, man. I mean, like I said, I never had any issues working with anybody. I was always one of those guys where I got along with anybody. PN was awesome. I mean, we just cracked jokes, and like I said, we were in buddy buddy. We were part of the stable, but like I said, it was just a cordial friendship. Nothing like, yeah. hey, let's go out for beers. Like I said, he was a good guy. He reach out. I know he's in Germany, and I mean, mm-hmm. and sometimes on Facebook, I wish him, hey, how you doing? Hope everything's well. Yeah. Like I said, I'm not a big talker when it yeah, comes yeah. to like the internet and stuff. And I'm one of those people like, hey, if I reach out to you, you need to reach out to me. If I don't hear from you, then I won't reach out to you. It's just a weird thing I have. Like, I just don't want to be a burden on anybody.
Yeah.
And just keep like, and everybody tells Devon always gets on my ass about, the reason I don't call you is because I don't want the angel. You're not bothering me. Yeah, but you know how I am. You know, I just don't bother. He knows me. He knows if he calls me, I'll pick up. And, you know, yeah. it's just that I'm just one of those people who don't like bothering nobody.
Yeah. I always thought, man, PN News, especially after talking to him, he's a little underappreciated, right? Because all everybody thinks of is that WCW rap thing he did.
Oh, but yeah. Man, shit was horrible.
Yeah, but he did so much good stuff, like in Europe and stuff, you know, cannonball this and that, whatever. I mean, he was a pretty good, you know, pretty good worker, big guy.
No, he was great. It's just that yo, baby, that shit was garbage.
Yeah, that's all everybody remembers because it's on garbage. TV. It is.
And when I watched it as a fan, meaning I was still training and wrestling and watching it, and I'm not knocking him, but I'm being honest, as a fan, I sat there like, this is some bullshit.
Me too, man. I always hated it and whatever else. And then when I talked to him and I'm like, whatever else, and he's like, yeah, you know, whatever. They wanted to do it with me. I was making money.
Bills.
And
Yeah,
and he's like, but I would have much rather have done, you know, like, you know, Cannonball Grizzly or whatever it was, you know, stuff I was doing in Portland or in Europe, you know, that was much more me. And it's like, oh yeah, you know.
But you know what's funny about, you know what's funny about situations like that? Okay, when you can convince people of the character, but internally you freaking hate it, mm-hmm. when you can shut off what you personally feel and what you have to do to make it get over, that takes a lot. Yeah, and I commend them for that, because knowing me being, you know, like, I'll be the same way. But when you inside, like, dude, I freaking hate this. But if you can shut off those emotions and go, I got to work.
Yeah.
And then he did what he did.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, that's what I think, man. In that spot, if somebody had given me something as ridiculous as that, I couldn't have done it. I would have been like, yeah, this is ridiculous. I'm not, you know, I don't want to do this. And it would have come through. People would have known that I wouldn't want to do that, because I couldn't fake it. You know, I couldn't be that professional. And
you got to be professional. You got to take your personal feelings aside. You know, what you feel and what you have to do are two different things in this business. Yeah.
So, and it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, look at Dustin Rhodes. I mean, the gold dust thing. Did he really like it in the beginning? Oh. But but he made it work.
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah, he super got it over. And everything else. But you mentioned New Jack, right? And obviously the Baldies, man, were known for that. You had a feud with New Jack. And you talked, right, man, you got along with New Jack and everything else and everything else. Did you ever have any problems in the ring? Because I know sometimes they say New Jack can be a little unpredictable.
No. I mean, there were some times I made him. I mean, there's some things that he done that, like, but again, I'm so easygoing. Yeah. And Jack, me and Jack always clicked. He clicked with me. He clicked with DeVito. You know, well, not Vic Grimes. we clicked with Jack. We had no problems with him. I mean, there were certain moments where he did, like, okay, like one time we were wrestling and, you know, fans bring him stuff and they brought some hot sauce and he went to put it in my mouth, the hot sauce.
Yeah.
And it was like Louisiana hot sauce. It was not like a Carolina Reapers or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, when you're working in the ring, so he's going to pour this in my mouth, but accidentally poured it up my nose.
Man,
so that, like, you know, so that's the one when I'm like, motherfucker, you know, and I'm cursing. So he's laughing and stuff, and, you know, or the time where he accidentally literally stabbed me in the ass with a barbecue fork.
I was gonna ask you about that. Yeah, what's the story with that?
It was an accident. I mean, he really stabbed me. I screamed beyond belief. And when I went to the back, I literally had the fork sticking out of my butt, and he came in. He came through the back, like, because we're, you know, brawling. And so he saw me run to the back and he went chased after me to finish the match. So Tommy pulled the fork out of my ass, but Jack came through the curtain laughing. And I didn't take it personal. Jack is Jack and I don't give a fuck. And I just laughed too. But it was very painful. I mean, it was literally to the bone.
I bet.
And, and Jack's laughing, Angel, I'm sorry. And he's just laughing. And I'm like, it's whatever, man. Let's finish the match. You know, I'm just laughing. It's all good. So we went and finished the match, and he still came back laughing and stuff. And even Danny Dorn was like, dude, you know, it's so funny. We're all laughing, but literally our friend just literally got stabbed and we're laughing about it. You know,
oh, man, what a business.
Yeah, what a business. But yeah, I mean, Jack would never do anything intentionally to hurt me. All the things that happened to me that was unintentional, and it was an accident. And he kissed me on the forehead when he stabbed me in the, you know, as he was laughing. he was just like, bro, I didn't mean to. Like I say, it's hard for me to understand. I mean, I understand, but when you're not in the mix of Jack's radar of violence, meaning, like, he beat up a bunch of dudes, man, and he stabbed a bunch of dudes, and he beat up Gypsy Joe, and he stabbed that kid with the knife, and he, you know, the mass transit incident.
Yep.
I never, you know, from my aspect, when people go, dude, I can't believe you know, how was it? It was fine. We never had a problem. We had a great, I never got hurt. You know, I mean, little mess ups, but that's it. But when you see it from your, like, now the Angel standing back when he watches the old footage, I'm like, God damn.
Yeah.
That's like two different elements. Like, Jack always took care of me.
Yeah. But it's funny, but you know, like, Jack, when you talk about those major incidents that everybody talks about, they all boil down to respect, right? And those are guys that maybe disrespected him. Maybe, you know, ran their mouth a little too much or something. That got Jack kind of riled up, right? I mean, you always hear people, you know, if you treated Jack right and talked to him right and, you know, gave him the proper respect, no one ever had any issue with him.
I think, yeah, and that's the thing. It was all about respect and addressing him in the correct manner. I mean, like, when Jack came up with ideas, you know, and, you know, I never went up to Jack. And I always went up to Jack and was, hey, Jack, what do you want to do? You know, what's your ideas? You know, I never went up to him, hey, man, when you get in the ring, this is what we're going to do. This is, you know, because regardless of how long I've been in ECW, Johnny taught me one thing. You know, I could be in the business 30 years. Johnny's been in the business 6 years, and he will always have 30 years ahead of me. So he's the most experienced person in the ring. So even though I was in ECW and I was already part of the family and stuff like that, Jack was already a co-founder, you know, not a co-founder, but, you know, he's been there before me. So I have to give him the respect to say, hey, what do you want to do? And then he'll say, nah, man, what's your idea? You know, you play that tennis. And I always gave Jack the respect and always followed his lead. And, you know, and he listened to my advice when he asked me, hey, what do you want to do? Well, if it's not too much to ask, I was thinking about this, but if you think it's stupid, you know, we don't have to do it. No, I like it, but we could do it like this. How's that sound? Hey, man, that's great. See, that's how you make those conversations go.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just things that happened in the ring, you know, with other individuals. Again, I wish I was the fly on the wall, but it just went sideways.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned, right, that, you know, Jack always treated you good, treated, you know, DeVito good, and everything. But you specifically said, not Vic Grimes, right? There was obviously all the Vic Grimes stuff. Everybody's heard those stories, but was there already... No, was there already heat brewing back in ECW between those two?
Okay. I love Vic. Vic is a great guy. I'm not shitting on him. This is the truth.
Yeah.
Vic is one of those guys. I'm trying to get a character where, okay, you remember in the Bugs Bunny cartoon with the episode where the mobster, the little midget mobster and the big, the dumb muscle, and he's like, hey, shut up, button your lip.
Yeah.
Okay, both.
Like
Vic used to say things that was so innocent and so stupid, but it was not that he was doing it intentionally. He just didn't think. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. He was just so innocent, and I'm not saying he was stupid. He just like he was not doing it intentionally. He wasn't doing anything very maliciously. But what really transpired to the New Jack situation with Vic is because the original during the Dansbury Fall in that pay-per-view, Jack, me and Jack came up with the idea that he's going to come in the ring and clean house. Now, let me give you some story before the show. That scaffold match was originally supposed to be me and Jack. Jack knew I was afraid of heights a little bit. The only reason I was afraid of heights because we previously at another show, maybe months, way months before that, we were doing a house show and they had the same setup, but it was maybe just two of them. So me and Jack, I said, "Hey Jack, let's go up there. We fight, and then you throw me off, and DeVito and Grimes will catch me as I fall." I mean, they didn't look high. So when I went up there and Jack, and it was when I didn't realize it was not like a like stable ground. It was rails because you put the folding chairs in that roll away, and you stack them. You know, so there, you know, like it's a slits for this for the legs. So there's no floor. It's just like the rails, you know, and it's like open. If you look at the video, it's just like it's open. So when we went up there, Jack hit me, and I'm like, "Holy shit!" You know, the thing is all unstable, it's shaking, and I'm like holding on to Jack's leg, and he goes, "Angel, I'm gonna throw you off." And this is a true story. I'm like, "Jack, I can't do it, man. This is too high. I'm fucking." And he's just laughing, and he's laughing, and he goes, "All right, man, fuck it. Just cut me off, and you throw me." So I cut him off and throw him. And if you want, if there's some footage out there, I wish I could see it because as I throw Jack into the, you know, my teammates and they're fighting, hopefully there's a camera looking at the opposite, you know, like over them, me gingerly climbing down this damn scaffold, like in fear because it's freak, because I knew I was scared. So anyway, so back to the pay-per-view. So now this is like maybe four tiers up. Or maybe three, but it's fucking high. So I said, "You know, I think I could do it if you could get a piece like a big old piece of plywood and cover that hole." Because originally the idea is Jack was gonna cut me off and suplex me. We were gonna set the tables up and he was gonna suplex me and we're gonna go through the tables. But I said, "I need stability. I need a floor. If you can give me a piece of giant wood so we can put it in on that spot. You know, cover up that massive gap, I'll do it. You know, I need stability." So the ring crew goes out, comes back, and they say, "Hey man, just let you know we didn't have time to go to Staples or any type of lumber yard to get the wood. We didn't have time." And I'm like, DeVito's there, Jack's there, Grimes is there, and I'm like, "I ain't doing it." You know, that's the first time I ever like stood up and, you know, said, "I'm not doing it. I can't do it." And that's when Vic was like, "I'll do it." And I was like, "All right, you could do it." I'm like, "Fuck it." So anyway, so during that match, before the match, Jack said, "Okay, this is what we're gonna do. I'm gonna come in, clean house, and just cl destroy the Baldies. But when I go up to the scaffold and we do the move, we're all laid out. So everybody's gonna get carried out. No, there's like no winner, no loser, just everybody's just floored." So we're like, "All right, whatever. It works for me." So then if you watch the footage, you know, they go up there and, you know, Vic apparently, again, I wasn't up there, but Jack said he was got scared and didn't want to go. And at a house show, it's different because it's a house show. When it's pay-per-view, all bets are off. Now, if it was me up there, yeah, Jack would have been mad at me because it's pay-per-view. There's no turning back. That, you know, but when it was a house show, it was different. So that's when he pulled Grimes off, and that's when Grimes landed on his head, and so on and so forth. But anyway, we were supposed to be all laid out, regardless of what happened to Jack. We were all supposed to be laid out and carried out. But if you watch the video, Vic stands up, and bangs his head, and he lifts his hand up in victory and walks away. So then when we went to the back, Jack went to the hospital and they were like, "Oh my God, Jack's at the hospital, blah, blah, blah." So instead of saying, "Hey, you know, is he okay? You know, what hospital he went to?" He said, hey, you know, it was Jack's fault. You know, he didn't want to go or some shit like that. He was just like shitting on him. So when the guys got when it got back to Jack at the hospital, and he didn't go visit Jack. So when it got back to the hospital, that Vic was talking shit about Jack and how he kind of like chickened out from that bump. Then Jack got hot. You know, again, this is all, like I said, I don't know what was said at the hospital. I just know that, the only thing I had in the conversation was Vic is like, Vic, what the fuck happened? He goes, oh, no, I don't know, man. He was up there and, we were going up to according to plan, but then apparently, he just didn't want to go. That was our end of our conversation. Whatever was said afterwards got back to me, and that's what was supposedly was said. And then what was said to Jack at the hospital. So then we're in, and like I said, I could remember this like yesterday. We're in the Bert Flickinger Center in Buffalo, New York. And this is months. I'm talking months later. Jack was out of commission. So Jack's coming back. So I'm like, cool, awesome. So we're in the locker room, and DeVito's sitting next to me, if I remember, and Vic was sitting behind me, behind the other locker. So like, when you go to the gym, you have the two lockers back to back, and the other side is on the chair, the bench, and I'm on the other side on the bench. So I'm putting on my boots, and Jack comes in, and he literally is walking in. I go, yo, what's up, Jack? Doesn't acknowledge me, doesn't say a word to me. Not mad at me. He was like focused. He walks by me, and all I heard was this, the like a crack of lightning, like a slap from hell, and the freaking locker behind me just like banged into me, like so it pushed me forward, like it was tipping over type of thing. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then I stood up and like peeped over, and Jack and Grimes are face to face, and Vic's like, what the fuck, what'd you do that for? Whatever. And I can't remember what he said, and Jack's just like, just if he was white, he'd be red, put it this way. So he was just beyond himself. And I don't know how, I think they were holding Jack back. I can't remember, or they were between them. Jack left. And so the story was, okay, so the story was is that, all right, when Jack's music hits, he's gonna come in and hit Vic Grimes with the guitar. And he's gonna, beat me and DeVito up, kick us out. Almost like the mass transit. Drove Devon out, drove Axl out. Focus on, Vic,
One bit, yeah.
and he was gonna hit him with the guitar, and he took, and apparently he was telling like, I'm gonna fucking kill him, I'm gonna fucking kill him, he's a fucking dead man, he's gonna die in this fucking ring. So then during that time, they came up to me, said, Angel, plans changed, and I said, what's up? And he goes, you're gonna take the guitar shot, and when Jack's music hits, Vic is gonna take a powder and leave, and then it's gonna be between you, Tommy, Jack, into you, the ball, you and DeVito versus Tommy and Jack, and Vic Grimes leads. So I'm like, oh, does Jack know? He goes, no, yeah. He goes, you want me to tell him? He goes, yeah, just tell him that things changed. So I'm like, all right. So when I went over there, Jack is like putting like, gimmicking up the guitar. So he's putting a brick in it. He put a bowling pin in it. He put I think some heavy metal in it, and then he starts taping it up with silver electrical tape. So as I'm seeing this, but this is as I'm about to talk to him, and he goes, hey man, I said, Jack, man, it's good to have you back. Hey, I needed to talk to you, man. I'm gonna fucking kill that motherfucker. And that motherfucker's dead, bro. So Angel, you stay out of my fucking way. I don't want you to get hurt. Hey, yeah, but Jack, yeah, man, I'm telling you, man, this is my vindication, man. It's time, it's gonna rain. And I'm like, yeah, Jack, I don't mean to, but I'm just like, because he kept talking over me. So then and I said, Jack, and he goes, what, man? And I said, things changed. You're supposed to hit me with the guitar, man. Apparently, Vic is gonna powder and leave the ring, and it's just between you and Tommy versus me and DeVito. No, this is fucking bullshit, motherfucker. All right, and he's screaming and yelling, and I'm like, well, Jack. And again, he keeps cutting me off because I'm trying to like get my, say something. So then, and then again, I said, Jack, and he goes, what? I totally understand you're pissed off, brother, but can you take out the brick, the bowling pin, and the whatever metal's in there, because you're gonna hit me with it. Yeah, man, I got you. And then he ran to Paul and just like got in Paul's ass about, again, I was not there from this, as I see him yelling, but I don't know what was said. And he was pissed. So That was it. That's what happened. So he was just so, he was laser focused on Vic. And, you know, regardless if he took all that stuff out, he reinforced that thing with electrical tape. Because if you watch the footage, that guitar never broke on my head because it was just like, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was so laser focused. And when Vic got fired, Jack was still laser focused. And then, of course, you know what happened with the scaffold match. I mean, Jack played it off very like, hey, man, don't worry about it. It's all good. You know, it's water under the bridge type of thing. And that's, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah. Yeah. So, when so many people, when people talk about the best years of ECW or whatever else, so many people sleep on those last few years. And, man, there was some definitely some good stuff there, especially in the tag division, right? Man, there was it's a pretty deep tag division there at the end. And you worked lots of tag matches during that time, man. Did you appreciate kind of the depth of the tag teams at that time?
Oh, yeah, man. I loved all those guys, man. I mean, Nova, man, you know, the Ring General, man. I mean, the guy came up with some innovative shit. Chris Chetty, Danny Doran, Roadkill, even though I give him shit all the time. You know, I love all those guys. Julio De Niro. There was Easy Money, Chris Hamrick. C.W. Anderson, you know, Bill Wiles. Even though C.W., you know, had a big head and, you know, and... I don't know how he was like. He always remind me of the creature from the Flintstones. What was it? The Great Kazoo?
Yeah, the green guy.
You know, yeah, the green guy with the big head. You know,
yeah.
But no, but I love CW. That's my boy. You know, he always give him shit. But like I said, it was just all love in the ring, man. We always wanted to make each other look good. It was not about me looking good. It was about me making CW look good, and he did the same for me. So that's why we always had these five-star matches, but we had some fun, exciting matches because
yeah.
The thing was we cared about putting over our friends, you know, not for our opponents, to make everybody look good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so when did you find out, or how did you find out about ECW coming to an end? Could you see that the signs were coming? Did it catch you off guard?
Well, it did catch us off guard, but we knew it was coming because when you say it's kind of like a double-edged sword, you had the hopes and dream like, oh, maybe it's going to survive. Maybe it's going to survive. You know, the reason why, okay, the situation is this. We knew that we were in financial distress.
Yeah.
And because we weren't getting paid, but we wanted to show Paul that we were soldiers and we were going to ride with him. You know, the only time everybody got upset is because Rob Van Dam was, and again, nothing against Rob. It's just that Rob got paid for the pay-per-view at the Hammerstein Ballroom. I think it was Massacre on 34th Street, I think it was, or the one before that. But I think he was wrestling Jerry Lynn, I think. And he got paid. And he got paid his back money and then some. So the boys were upset, like, it, you know, like, hey, that's fucking bullshit. You know, we're the ones that are, you know, still here, you know, and we're not getting paid and stuff. And I know we're not Rob Van Dam, but it was just, you know, understandable, the feeling. So, you know, we knew that things were going to, was rocky, but we just had that glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
We had that glimmer of hope that things would get better. And the thing was, is that, when I don't know, it was just hard because when finally when myself decided I wasn't gonna go to, I can't remember what town it was, the last show,
yeah, like in Iowa or something, it was something.
Yeah. And everybody was driving, I wasn't flying, and you know, nobody, I said I'm not going, dude, I can't afford it, which I couldn't
yeah.
afford to go because A, I didn't have a job, meaning, you know, let's say I was working in ECW and I had a job during the week.
Uh-huh.
Then you could kind of flip the bills and the travel.
Yeah.
But my income was strictly ECW. So when you're not getting paid and your finances are dwindling, and I'm not making, you know, like saying like Tommy Dreamer money, Var Van Dam money, you know, I was making good money, but not to that level.
Yeah.
And I had bills and it was eating up my finances and I was just like, fuck. So yeah. I was like, I'm not going, man. I have to make a stand. So when I didn't go, I really kicked myself in the ass because that was the last show, not knowing. I didn't know at the time because the only reason I found out is after that show, that's when, you know, Rhino said, hey, man, it's on the internet, man. You know, the company went bankrupt, you know. And then we did our last show, some show in Buffalo. I got a picture of it somewhere. Where Paul was like, hey, man, I'm not leaving California without a deal. we're gonna survive this, you know. And then lord and behold, that Monday Night Raw, guess who's coming out Monday Night Raw? Is Paul.
Yep.
That motherfucker. You know, he worked, you know. So I mean, yeah, we knew, but we just had hopes, man. It's just it was just high hopes.
Yeah. Have you seen Paul since it closed? Have you run into him anywhere?
Oh, I've seen Paul a couple times. I saw Paul in Kansas City when I had to go up there for D-Von, wanted me to show up for something, and Paul gave me a big hug. I just Paul sent me just past February. He wished me a happy birthday. So Paul reaches out to me. I'm not mad at him. I love Paul.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he gave me an opportunity that nobody will ever give me. Paul was the one that molded my character and let me be who I wanted to be. You know, the only animosity I had is just the sad that the company went, and it was heartbreaking. Yeah, I got over it. Like I said, I owe Paul a lot. And like yeah. I said, I always make the jokes about the checks bouncing and, you know, and all this crazy antics. But it's just me just trying to make it a little bit, you know, a little levity on it. You know, like, it, you know, that's all I have is just to make jokes, you know. So,
yeah. Well, I know. Yeah. You've worked quite a bit in Puerto Rico.
Uh-huh.
And I read that you've got some issues with Dutch Mantel.
Dude, why are you bringing that up, man? I thought you were a cool guy.
You don't want to talk about Dutch?
No, no, fuck that. I can talk about that motherfucker. I hate that motherfucker. I hope he dies.
Yeah,
I can't stand him.
Why? Come on, for the listeners, man. At least,
I said the story Dutch many. I told the story many times, but I don't have a problem repeating it. The reason why I get along with everybody. Remember in the previous conversations, I said I get along with everybody.
Yeah, man. You seem like such a laid back, easy going guy, man.
Yeah, I try to keep myself level headed. But at the time when I went to Puerto Rico, I was working for Victor Quiñones, Savio mm-hmm. Vega, you know, and Dutch was the booker of the mm-hmm. locker room.
Yep.
Now, at that moment in time, I was just still bitter that the company folded. And I was not going to let nobody take advantage of me. And I'm not saying Paul took advantage of me. I was just it's like breaking up with a girl, and you're like, man, I'm not going to let no woman fuck with me right now. I'm just...
Yeah. You're not gonna get in a bad situation again, right?
Yeah, I'm here to work, just leave me the fuck alone.
Yeah.
So that's all I cared about, you know, and I was not gonna let nobody do anything to me. I was gonna speak my mind. So everything was great. I had my deal was, you know, I would stay in the condo in New San Juan at the I would get paid. I would always have transportation to the show, so I didn't have to worry about renting a car. This is the agreement that I had with Victor. And that was perfect, you know. And I love Victor; he was great.
Yeah.
So now the problem was that he said, "Okay, you're gonna stay at the condo, but you're gonna be rooming with Lobo. Dutch is also in that room, so he had his own bedroom, and I was sharing a room with Lobo, Anarchy, and myself. Anarchy slept in the closet, which was freaking funny as hell. It was like a walk-in closet, and there was like a single bed in there. Like, dude, it looked like a prison cell. He had a little TV on a milk crate, it was just funny. Great guy, but it's a true story.
So wait a minute. Hold on. Dutch had his own room, and you're putting a guy in a walk-in closet.
Yeah, it was because Lobo had the bed.
Okay.
I had a bed, and since I was and Anarchy was a new guy, he was a young boy basically. So he gave the veteran myself. He goes, "Oh no, I stay in the closet. You have the bed." So I didn't know if he slept there or not. I just know he had a setup in the closet,
okay,
you know, like R. Kelly.
Yeah.
So he had his own closet room. You know, and it was funny, man, because like I used to knock on the door like cousin it when Adam's been knocking on a cigar box and it opened up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's laying on the floor under the clothes, but you know, under the that where you hang your clothes, like that space underneath it. He's under the clothes on that bed with the TV across from him, just on his hand, like, you know, his elbow, you know, pressed down, his hand on it, and I'm like, hey man, we're gonna go eat or whatever. Oh yeah, I'll go. So anyway, the story is that it's not the story. This is what happened. Anarchy brought over a girl who had a kid. It was like 6 months old, and it was a girlfriend, a side piece, whatever. I didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
So he comes, hey man, you know, and I was watching VHS tapes of last week's show. I just wanted to see how it was. So I was in the living room watching TV. So he comes in with this girl and he goes, hey man, you know, you know, this is so and so. Oh, hey, how you doing? You know, and he goes, I'm just, you know, we're going in the room and just hanging out. And I'm like, all right, whatever, dude. I don't care. You're a grown ass man. So, but of course, I'm sitting there like, okay, you're gonna go in our bedroom, but you're gonna take her in the closet. You know, like, okay, whatever. And then he goes, hey, is it okay if I put the baby to sleep on your bed? Dude, I don't care. Just, yeah, whatever. So he did that. So then I'm sitting in the living room, and let's say 30 minutes passed, maybe 35. Dutch walks in. Hey, have you seen Anarchy? So my brain is like, well, I'm not gonna stooge him out because he's in the room with a girl, and I don't know. He's a young, you know, the young. When I say young bucks, he's like the new guy in the business. You know, I don't want to get him in trouble because he has no weight. You know, so I said, no, nah, man, I haven't seen him. I've been sitting here watching tapes. So he's like, oh, okay. So he walks away and he's walking to the door to leave the apartment, and he stops. Now, did he hear something? Did he hear a groan? Did he hear a moan? Did he hear the baby chuckle? I didn't hear nothing because I guess I had the TV going. So he decides to go to the bedroom. He goes to the bedroom, maybe a minute, not even a minute. He comes back out and he goes, and he points to me with his finger. You need to get that girl and that baby out of here. So right there, I'm like, in my brain, I'm like, he's pointing his finger in my face, and I'm like, what the fuck? That's not my girl. That's not my kid. That's not, I didn't bring the bitch in. You know, so that's not my problem. You know, so he leaves. So then I went downstairs because Victor had three apartments, one on the top floor that was his, the one I was in, and then he had another one on the first floor that he turned into a production office. So he had like TV, you know, they had the production stuff to, you know, to do the editing and all that crazy shit. They had a computer, Victor, two bedrooms, but one was Victor's office, the other one, I forgot what the fuck it was, and a bathroom and a living room, whatever. So when we went, so I went down there to check my email. I checked my email, and when I walked in, it was, and I looked in the room when I was walking in with no problem. It was Dutch, Victor, Savio, and oh my God, now I forgot his name. The guy from the Los Boricos was the hairy chest.
Oh, shit. What's his name? Yeah, I'm shooting a blank too. I know
Yeah,
you're talking about though.
he's all hairy, not Hurricane Castillo, but the other guy.
Totally shooting a
So
blank.
yeah, so he was in there. So I go get on the computer, check my email, and I log off, and I'm leaving. I'm leaving out of the apartment. And when I'm leaving, Dutch grabs me, literally grabs me, and like spins me, but nothing forceful, just enough to say, "Hey, turn around." So he turns around, I turn around, and he goes, "The next time I ask you where anybody's at, you freaking, you know," he goes, "you fucking tell me, because the next time you'll find yourself back to New York." So right there, I'm like, pause. I'm not one of these kids. So when he started walking away, I grabbed him and I turned him. I said, look, motherfucker, you don't talk to me that way. I'm not your fucking kid. I'm not these young boys. You show me some fucking respect, or me and you're gonna have a different conversation. So go fuck yourself. He gets pissed off. He leaves. I go to Victor. Victor, what the fuck is this problem? That's not my problem. And he Anarchy brings in a girl. And I'm talking to Savio, and I'm explaining my case. Like, who the fuck is he? You know, yeah, he's been in the business all a long time. He's the book. Oh, he's the booker. I don't give a fuck if he's the booker. He don't talk to me that way. Fuck him. So then he goes, oh, well, Angel, you know, Victor was cool. He's Angel, he's just a booker, just let it go. Don't worry about it, whatever. So then a week later, Dutch comes up to me. Yeah, he was doing the guy from the Office Space. Yeah. We're having some guy come from Canada. It was Abyss. We're having some guy come down. We need the room. So you need to find a, we need you need to find another place to stay. So I'm like, okay. No, I'm sorry, backwards. The car, it was the car first. Oh, you need to get a ride first, right? You know, but Abyss was still coming, all that stuff. You need to get a ride to the shows because we need the space. Okay, fine. So I rented a car. The following week, that's when the apartment thing came up. Yeah, well, we need you to clear out in 3 weeks, you know, because we need the space. So I'm like, that's not what, that was not my deal. Yeah, things changed. You just, we need the apartment. So he's just doing it because I spoke up. So I said, fuck this. I said, no, fuck that. I'm done. Now I'm not gonna let this motherfucker shit on me. So I took the first flight back to, you know, and I left. I said, fuck it. I left him stranded. I left him fucking hanging. Savio was mad because, and I'm not mad at Savio. I respect Savio, but the story came back to me. Oh, he was, this is one thing. It's just like a woman when you break up with him. Oh, he ain't shit. He can't fuck for shit. His dick was small. He was nothing because they shit on you. Before I was like, oh man, great worker, solid worker, great athlete. When I left, apparently Savio was like, hey, he wasn't all that. He was all right. He, you know, he couldn't hold water. You know, all of a sudden I was being shit on just to justify why I had left, you know, left.
Yeah, yeah.
So what made it even worse was this is years later, and I'm talking maybe 3 to 4 or 5 years later. Homicide reaches out to me. And he's like, because me and Homicide know each other since we're, you know, from the streets, from young, young.
Yeah.
So Homicide, no, Louis reaches out to me saying Homicide is looking for me.
Okay.
So I said, for what? He goes, he needs to talk to you. He goes, I don't know. He just wants to talk to you. Something has to do with TNA. All right. So I reach out to him. So, yo, dude, hey, but yo, hey, I have this idea, man. Machete's not working out. Apollo is going back to Puerto Rico, and we need a bigger guy. Machete is good, but we just need a bigger guy. So I was thinking of, you know, I thought of you, and I want you to, you know, be part of LAX. Okay. So I'm like, okay. You know, goes, I said, because you need to talk to, oh my God, Terry Taylor. You need to talk to Terry Taylor. So Terry Taylor was coming down to Wichita for the show. TNA was going to show too. So I had to meet up with him. So I met up with Terry. We had a massive conversation. I reached out to Devon to put in a good word for me, you know, and Devon always puts in a good word for me. Anything that Devon says he does, it happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Devon said, yeah, I got you, man. I put in a good word. So I had Homicide put in a good word for me. I had Devon put in a good word for me. I had Terry Taylor put in a good word for me. Did I know? I didn't know who the fucking booker and the fucking people behind the scenes were. It was Savio and Dutch.
Yeah.
When Dutch found out that my name was in the ring running for the LAX gimmick, he's like, no, fuck him. I don't want him. No, this and that, this and this. And Devon called me, go, dude, what the fuck happened? You know, because remember, there was, I mean, even though it was internet, there was no sheets.
Right.
So
yeah.
the story never came across the ocean of what happened compared to how it is now.
Yep.
So I told Devon what happened. He goes, bro, he's shitting on you. He no matter what I do, they're not budging. They don't want you. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So again, it was between me and Hernandez. And and even Hernandez, and I joke with Hernandez once, you know, because we never met, but you know, he did an interview of a friend of mine, and I chipped in on the line.
Yeah,
and it was, like I said, it was true. You got my spot, you know, and I'm happy. Things happen for a reason. Hernandez is great, but it's so funny how things transpire, how certain gimmicks, you know, like you didn't know that if things would have panned out, that Angel of the Baldies would have been tag team partners with the Homicide and become LAX.
LAX,
and
yep.
So and so on and so forth. But due to the fact that fucking Dutch was so bitter, you know, and people were like, oh, you got heat with Dutch. I said, how the fuck do I have heat with Dutch? How the fuck am I supposed to have heat with this motherfucker? Well, he's the one that disrespected me. He's the one that grabbed me like I was a fucking, like a 10-year-old kid, and he's scolding a child.
Yeah.
He's just mad because I stood up for myself. I didn't eat his shit. I didn't decide to go get another apartment. You know, I did rent a car and stay there and eat humble pie. And I stood up for myself and said, fuck you, I'm out. And I left.
Yep.
And that's why he's mad. And that's why he's pissed off. So he can go on all the internet shows and talk to you, talk to fucking Joe Rogan, jokingly, talk to the guy from England that he does a show with, talk about, to anybody, and tell everybody that how untalented I am, how he fired me, whatever. Fuck him. When he dies, I will buy first class and piss on his fucking grave. Hey, so you could send him a copy of this tape. You could fucking put it in a fucking silver envelope with a ribbon on it, because he knows I cannot stand him. The day he fucking dies, you call me and we'll do another interview of me celebrating, because that is a shoot.
Oh yeah,
that's not gonna work.
Live on location, Angel. I will do it live. Dutch's grave.
Dive. It will be like, you ever saw the movie Max Payne with Donnie Wahlberg?
Yeah. Uh huh.
You know, I mean, Mark Wahlberg. Yeah, that would be me. Yeah. Like, it would be a cartoon version of a graphic novel, and the wind's blowing in my ties, blowing in the wind while I'm pissing on his grave.
There you go.
It'll be all like right. Sin City, bro.
Yeah.
The only thing, everything be black and white except the stream of piss that'd be yellow.
Yellow, yeah. Oh, man. Well, man, I apologize for opening that wound up.
No, I hate that guy. Fuck him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, man. Whew. There you go, man. There's the truth straight from Angel's mouth.
Oh, the
And
truth. Yeah, dude. I told my girlfriend one time, I said, I would love to do, like in the movie, I'm always qu quoting movies, but in the Bronx Tale, when he grabbed the guy's face and he goes, "Look at me. Remember my face. I did this to you." I want to be the guy on his deathbed just grabbing his face. The last thing you're going to see is me watching you fucking die. You
Yeah,
know,
grabbing that mustache.
yeah, grabbing the handlebar mustache and holding him, and pulling him to my face.
Yeah, man, I like that you quote movies and stuff, man, because I'm a big movie guy too.
Yeah.
That clicks with me, man. Well, what? Hey, man, what ended up leading you to retiring from wrestling?
I didn't,
Just.
no, I didn't retire, man. I mean, it's not about retirement. It was after September 11th. Work was scarce. Nobody was hiring. I needed to work. I needed to make a living. So I had to make a decision to like work. And then I got a regular job and I became a cop and all that stuff. And no longer a cop, but I did all that. And I never retired. It was just like I needed to make money. And I figured, and I'm at a point in my life that I just pick and choose what I want to do. And I don't, and now that I'm getting older, I just don't feel like I'm at the same athletic skill set as I was before. I'm not saying I suck. I just don't feel like I'm, it's like the football, like football, man, you're like, do you still have it? Yeah, you can still move a little bit, but you're not as quick. And like I said, I pick and choose my shows. I really
Well,
don't need the money,
hey, come on, Angel, man. This is professional wrestling. You're not supposed to be self-aware of your own abilities. Because there's guys out there 70 trying to do it that are embarrassing themselves.
And that's the problem. I just don't want, it's not fair to the fans. And I'm saying I'm in shape. I've been, I'm down to 277. I've been running, I've been working out. But I just know that it's not fair to the fans. I paid the money to see me that they're not getting their money's worth. So yeah, I'll do shows, but it's just really selective that I'm like, okay, I could do this. But if it's like if TNA called me and AEW called me, no, I ain't doing that. I mean Nana, I mean I trained Nana and Nana was like I just saw him recently. Well, not recently, but like when they came to Wichita, we hung out and he goes, man, you should come to AEW. I could get you some work, And I said, no, I ain't fucking working for AEW. First of all, I'm not gonna come in to put over Hook. Or all, because that's what I've been seeing. A lot of guys coming in, and it's nothing, no ego. It's just that I just, whatever legacy I have, I just want to keep what I have. And for me to show up like, here he is, former ECW legend, the Kingpin Angel, and I do my thing, and then I get squashed. Then it kind of take,
my guy's buck 10.
yeah. And I'm like, and it's not about Hook, it's about anybody. I just don't
No,
want to
you're right.
lose. I don't want to lose what I have. Now, if it was a storyline and it built up to that point where I lost, that's different. But for me to come in from one shot for $250 just to just put this kid over, just to get my, to lose what I have left. Now, I'm all right. I told no, I'm good. I'm good. I don't need it.
No. What about like conventions and things like that? Do you ever get invited to
Yeah, I
do
do
some of
those.
those?
Oh yeah, I'd be happy to do those. I mean, I love seeing the fans, love talking to the fans. I love it's that's a different beast, That's why I'm trying to do other things that still in the wrestling world, I mean, if I could do, shit, I wish I could get a job working for TKO now behind the scenes or be an agent like Jerry Lynn. But again, that's not a thankful, it's a thankless job because I mean, how much shit do they have to go through? You got to show me some dollars,
It's kind of a cool time though for guys like you, right? That have a had a good career and got some name value to hang on, right? With the conventions and different things. There's still avenues out there for you to kind of get your fix and meet the crowd. And like you said, you get to pick and choose, right? Do what you want to do and when you want to do it. So there's some things to do. And
Yeah, I mean, the business right now, like I'm a different person compared to the Angel that was in the business. And now I don't give a fuck. And I go in the locker room, I don't give a fuck. I go fuck yourself, who the fuck are you? I just don't care because you cannot do to me anything that, that has not been done. You're not going to call me next week to go, "Hey, we want you to be on this pay-per-view." I'm not being a total dick. I'm just being honest and I'm being myself instead of holding all yeah, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, whatever you want, sir. And because you don't want heat. No, I'm all right. Fuck everybody.
Yep. Well, that's there you go, man. Man, kind of a weird thing to hear a professional wrestler, man, keeping their self pride in check and knowing their worth. Because sometimes, man, it's embarrassing, man. Some of the guys that I looked up to and that I really enjoyed watching and whatever else, some of the things they do, it's a little embarrassing.
Well,
And
you gotta look at it like this. It's just like acting or any type of acting, sports. When you first start on comedy, when you first start off in the business, you don't have a pot to piss in, right? You're making $150 a night. You have no money, so you have to be humble. You have to eat crow, because then because you they could fire you and you're shit out of luck. But then when you get to that, the Undertaker status, Shawn Michaels status, that money, when you got money in the bank and you don't give a fuck if you get fired because you're rich. You're wiping your ass with $50 bills. You're hiring hookers and sniffing cocaine off their ass jokingly. But when you got that power of like, okay, if they fire me, fuck it. It's good. But when you're broke and a starving artist, then that's when you have to be like, oh, yeah, you're right.
Well, hey, do you, Angel, man, thanks for coming on here, man. I could talk to you for a while, man. You're highly entertaining.
Well, you
And
could have talked to me for a while since you didn't. You pulled that high spot on the last one. Oh man, I can't make it because I had a bar mitzvah to go
want a bar mitzvah. I don't remember what it was, but it wasn't a bar mitzvah. I can guarantee you that.
I understand. I don't. It's hard for me. Like I said, I pick and choose shows, and I don't like doing too many shows because it's nothing against you. It's just I get the same questions. So how long you been in the business? Johnny trained you, and you did great. But I just like to separate it a lot because if I do a show every week, every day of the same question, it's like eating oatmeal with butter on it every day. You're just gonna get like tired of it. So that's why I don't do too many shows because I just
Yeah, I get it.
still want to be fresh and not be like, oh man, I don't want to repeat this shit. I just said that yesterday.
Well, I mean, I try to be a little more conversational about it and less whatever, like taking a test. And but I do appreciate your time and getting with me. I know, like we said, we've been trying to do this for quite a while. And I had to whatever, I had to bail on you the one time when we had it scheduled
Well,
up and
when you it's just like a beautiful woman. If you want that date, you have to work at it. So, I had to shut you down a couple times,
Well, I'm glad I earned it back, man. I'm glad I did.
No worries, man. I greatly appreciate you having me on, and if you ever want me back on, I'll be happy to do so.
Absolutely. Do you, I'm sorry, do you, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but do you have a way that fans can follow you to keep up on, like, if you do any appearances or anything like that, or
Oh,
do you
dude,
just.
I'm easily found. You found me.
Yeah, okay.
Trust me, I'm not. I don't have. I don't hide from nobody.
There you
Nobody.
go.
Like I said, if it's a stupid question, I don't answer. But, and I get a lot. I hate saying that, but there's a lot of like, oh, dude, why are you asking me something like, hey, what's Rob Van Dam like, bro, dude? I'm watching a movie. I'm having dinner. That's. Did you really get hurt stabbed in the ass with a fork with New Jack? Yes. Did it really hurt? Look, dude. I don't
Yes.
say nothing. I'll say yeah. I say yes, and then I'm like, and then he asks me, I'm like, I'm not gonna answer. It's just ridiculous, And
Kind of
it
an
sounds like.
open-ended question, right? What's Rob Van Dam like? Yeah, it's like, yeah, which night? It's
And I know they're not doing it intentionally, but it's just after a
yeah.
while, it gets like, dude, you're killing me. I
I know.
appreciate even I appreciate every fan that reaches out to me that they think of me. They
Yeah.
acknowledge me, and
Yep.
I'm not mad at that. It's just you always some people catch me at the wrong time,
Yep.
like it's the wrong time. Like, oh my God, I'm making a protein shake and it spilled all over the counter, and this guy goes, hey man, I have a question about New Jack. Like, I ain't gonna answer that. It's just, God damn it, I'm busy.
I'm cleaning up my protein shake, man.
It's just I'm just very picky.
Yeah. Well, again, I appreciate you giving me the time. And yeah, I mean, I'd love to do a follow-up with you sometime down the road and give us some time and revisit, maybe talk a little deeper about some certain things. But man,
Yeah, no
Angel,
problem, man. Absolutely.
yeah.
Just tell me where fans could see this show. So if people want to hear it, I could forward it to them. Just
I
send it to
will.
them,
I
man.
will. It'd be just a few weeks because I got several interviews taped ahead of yours.
Wait
But
a minute.
not
Nobody's ahead of the kingpin, the king of the
that.
streets.
Well,
I mean, it better be somebody more important than me. It better not be Colin Delaney or the fucking
No.
who's the guy with no chin? What was that guy with no chin in WWE?
Oh yeah, I love fuck Ellsworth or whatever his name is. I can't remember
Ellsworth.
his
It
first
better not be somebody ahead of me like that,
No,
bro. It's crazy.
man. No,
You know?
man. No, no, I don't.
No worries.
I wouldn't interview Ellsworth anyway. I
No,
got nothing
but
to say to that guy.
well, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you for even
Yeah,
considering me as
sure.
a interview. You know, and I appreciate it, man. Even though I joke around a
Absolutely.
lot, I appreciate
No.
people thinking about me and putting me on the show. That shows that
Absolutely.
I still
Absolutely.
have some relevant in this
Yeah.
business.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews. Sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to USWAPodcast.com.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
All right, guys, thank you to the Kingpin for coming on and speaking with me and having that conversation. Fun time. Very much enjoyed that interview. Guys, go follow me on X. I'm at the Dave Dynasty. While you're out there, go check out all of the WrestleCopia Network of podcasts. You can look them up on your favorite podcast platform or go to WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net. Or download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your devices. My guest next week is going to be Jeff Farmer, better known to all of you as the NWO Sting. I'm sure you remember him from those WCW days. We talk about the NWO, we talk about Japan, we talk about his post-wrestling career, and much, much more. Jeff is a very intelligent, fun guy to talk to. Got some good Japanese stuff in this conversation. Some good conversation about the development of the NWO Sting, that whole bit. How it worked in WCW and everything else. So you're going to want to tune in and check that out. It's a fun conversation. Thank you guys to all the listeners and supporters and everything else for all your follows and interactions and everything you do in supporting the show and supporting me. Like I said earlier, please go to Facebook, look up the Nostalgic Dave Dynasty page, give that a like. Let me try to help me grow back my following there. But until next week, Wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we've brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.